086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right, it's always a busy DL debate. Lots to talk about this evening, as always. Brendan Devenny, it's presenter. Good morning, Brendan.
Morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
I'm getting on the best, my man, and you?
Good, good. Let's start with hurling, if that's all right. And I think, you know, hurling fans, of which you're amongst, were kind of robbed of a potential classic yesterday. Cork 4-27, Tipperary 24 points. And it all came down, I suppose, to Tipperary playing much of the game, all the game with just 14 men.
Yeah, certainly. I suppose I was up in Clonus, so just seeing bits and pieces of it last night. But yeah, the famous Monster Hurling, I suppose, is the opposite to your Ulster Football Championship. It's the one where all the excitement lies. And yeah, sending off being a different, and of course then leaving things open for goals and Cork punished.
Donegal versus Down yesterday. How break it down for us. It's a tough one, right? Because I get the feeling that on the line, Jim McGuinness thought Donegal were in control, given some of the subs he made later on in the game. But maybe fans watching on were thinking, wow, OK, we're going to need a much better performance against Armagh. What's your sort of assessment of what we saw from Donegal yesterday? I mean, it was lacklustre at times, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose they done what they needed to do. Listen, it was interesting, I suppose, the Down tactics at times. They tried to open out our defence a wee bit, the shield that we had. And I think that was a good maybe learning process for Donegal, in terms of you could tell that there was a bit of thought put on to try and break down the shield. So I think there was good learning in that for Donegal. But at half-time, you know, it was 15-7. You know, Donegal were very much in control of the game, and you just got the feeling in the second half that Donegal would try and manage it, which is always a dangerous thing. Greg, you know, I said at the gym after about, there was a period they were down, had 3 points in a row, and Jim said, you know, it's not 3 points in a hundred major in the modern new rules, but it wasn't really that. Donegal had four attacks in that time and they were all stopped. You know, we dispossessed. And just after those 3 points, you know, Down missed a two-pointer. So it would have brought it back to 3 points at that stage of the game. And, you know, it would have been game on about then. There was whatever few Down fans were there, certainly get a small bit of energy in it, and you just got the feeling here we'd need to start clipping over. And then you had the Langan two-pointer from distance, which was a big score, just to keep that I suppose that glimmer of hope that Down had that they could make a game of it late on. Of course, they had two goal chances where in that second half where they could again maybe energise the Down team, but then again we missed another 2 1-on-1s ourselves,
and so they probably should have been down to 14 men. There's so many variables, I suppose. Really, it is just what it is.
It was job done. Listen, when the ball's thrown in there in a couple of weeks' time, do not be worried about that Down match. Listen,
well, just in relation to that, I mean, was that game management? Like, you know, you take McBurty off, you take Murphy off, you must be pretty comfortable with the control you have in the game. And whilst it might not be pretty, there must have been a sense there that there were still gears, you know what I mean? And that if they needed to be, if they needed to be used, they were there.
Yeah, well, listen, I don't think there's any issue. And, you know, Murphy had played, you know, the two full matches previous there. And a lot of us were a bit maybe surprised at that, because it looked like, particularly the way he came in there a couple of games, the way he completely changed it for Donegal, that he would be, a lot of us thought it would be a tactic to bring him in.
Impact sub.
Yeah, and I suppose really that's not a role maybe for Michael Murphy. And obviously Jim sees it different, because when the game was going against us against Monaghan, when they were really putting it up to us, he kind of thought if Michael was coming in at that point, is that the kind of role for him? But obviously Jim sees it different, and Michael's ability on the pitch, you know, when he is given the ball, and that the thing is about playing him inside with McBurty and with Gallen, and that, like, we don't tend to use the ball, we don't tend to kick it in. So what happens is Michael will come out around and maybe come in the loop, and he'll get different parts of the possession, but we probably don't see him on the ball as much as we would like. So how Jim uses that is he's thinking about freshness, but as well as that, the squad, you know, you've a lot of good players on the bench there that are chomping in the bit. And certainly you think if players are at a certain stage of their career, it's important to keep them fresh. Yeah. So I think when Donegal kind of had that cushion, it was smart enough to, I think, bring them off and use the bench.
And I think I think Jim McGuinness is very keen and perhaps seeing it with Galway that the whole squad plays up at the same pace, at the same level, so that you can interchange people without necessarily a drop in the overall performance. And I get the feeling everything he does is sort of working towards that and with that in mind. So it's on to Armagh in an Ulster final. It's going to be on Clonus. It's on Saturday night. It's not going to please everyone, right? Are you happy it's in Clonus? We did see previous Ulster finals in Croke Park where, you know, there was 60-odd, 65,000 people were able to attend, so you'd get twice as many people to watch it as such. Or do you believe it's the home of the Ulster final and that's just the way it should be?
Well, I think there's a case to be made for both, Rick, but I think for most people, they're happy in Clonus. And I don't think, I mean, back to them days where there was a real boom time in the GAA and, you know, the Ulster final needed to be taken out of it just for the demand. I don't think the demand, listen, it would exceed what Clonus would have, but not to a level for me.
Double
it. It'd be Croke Park. Mm. So, and as well as that, let's say you got to 45,000 or even 50 in Croke Park, that's still, in Croke Park terms, it's not like a sellout, and it certainly wouldn't have the atmosphere of what Clonus is going to have. So I think it was a smart move to keep it there. And it's, listen, the fact that we were in a qualifier too, Greg, and it's only a couple of weeks after the league, you know, it's a lot for Donegal people and fans, you know, and they've been brilliant. You see so many of them at all the matches. They're travelling, you know, so, you know, we've already, like, what's that now? That'll be four games in what, five, 6 weeks?
Yeah, there's three in the row, yeah. Wasn't there? And then, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot. So I think to go the whole way to Dublin, and for some people that's an overnight, and I think that would have been a lot to ask.
I hear you. What did you learn from Armagh in their tussle with Tyrone, or Tyrone for that matter? It was a tight one. It's a shame sometimes that games finish in certain ways because it takes away then from the 70 minutes. But what's your reflection on that game and what it means for the Ulster final?
Yeah, I think probably with Armagh just coming back off the back of last year, they were losing maybe tight games and maybe that bit of composure and that wee bit of belief wasn't with them. But ever since we obviously beat them in the Ulster final and that penalty shootout, I mean, that was back-to-back finals for them. Now they're in their third final in a row. So they are desperate to win it, Greg, and they did look like the bit of composure was there in final moments, which maybe was lacking in other games. So, you know, once he came through those qualifiers, and particularly I think the Kerry semi-final, then obviously the Galway final, that is a different Armagh. Their squad has improved tremendously as well. You know, they have a lot of options too. So a bit like that Tyrone game, Greg, Armagh and Donegal's going to come down to a score either way. It could be extra time again. There will be absolutely nothing on that. But I do sense a wee bit more assuredly with them.
Yeah, I watched much of the Meath-Dublin game. I thought Meath were good value for their victory. It got tight towards the end, but that's what we would like, isn't it? They ran up a cricket score in the first half and held on. How significant is it? Well, it's the first time they've lost in their province since 2010, I believe. But how significant is it, do you think, even for the All-Ireland series, Meath seemed to handle Dublin as well as they did?
Yeah, listen, big change over in the Dublin squad. You know, you've absolute iconic men retiring. Greg, there's always going to be that difficulty of the changeover. And they performed easy well in the week. I mean, they won four games in the league, which nobody won more than four games in the league. And they were fairly comfortable. So we weren't too sure what we were going to see in the championship. But of course, this was the first time a semi-final was taken, you know, outside of Croke Park since 1985. And you're talking about Croke Park there, you know, in terms of a potential Ulster final there. But, you know, you look at Leinster, Dublin, it's a home game. I mean, if you take it like this, Greg, if the Ulster final has been played in Balbuffet, who would be odds on to win it? Mm. It's 50-50 now. There's no doubting Donegal would be clear favourites. So that home venue is massive for them. So they take them out, and then for Meath, they have a rattle at them. I mean, it's brilliant to see. I mean, Louth-Meath final. I mean, of course, it brings back the famous controversial one there where the ball was carried over the line in the last couple of minutes. Was it a goal? Was it not? So it's a repeat of that final. Right? But certainly, it's brilliant for Leinster football because the Leinster Championship was a dead man walking there until somebody finally beat the Dubs. So Meath has done a fair play to them. And of course, a lot of controversy in the back of Robbie Brennan's tenure there as well, you know, with coaches walking away and a bit of turmoil there. But Meath certainly pulled it together and full value for the victory.
Right, OK. Just back to hurling. I'm sure you're going to be talking about Donegal's win in the Christy Ring Cup. I mean, what a win. What a performance against Tyrone.
Yeah, you know, I suppose it's a barometer of where Donegal hurling is going. You know, for years there, it's Tyrone-Donegal clashes. There was nothing in them. You wouldn't know who's going to win them. With Tyrone at home on Saturday, you thought there's the potential for a Tyrone victory. But a 23.1 for our lads, amazing stuff. What a game. And it just shows where Donegal hurling is at now. That's a massive victory for Donegal, especially, particularly away from home. So listen, well done to Mickey McCann.
And there was so much else that will be covered on the show tonight. Guests Neil Loughran of the Irish News and senior club managers Gary McDade and Barry Meehan, with a special focus on, and this is how fast things come at you, already looking forward to the new club season with the new rules, which is going to be interesting. There have been some club games with them, and people I've spoken to have said they enjoyed it and the rules were enforced, you know. The players can help you out a bit and stuff as well. But it's going to be an interesting chat. You've a lot to fit in, Brendan.
Yeah, I'll have to talk fast, Greg. Yeah. Listen, we're four games into the league. You know, I was very interested just to see what the feeling is, because there was so much talk about the fact that you've all the officials at county games, and how is a ref, you know, and I've heard anecdotally some refs not applying the rules properly. And of course, we want to give them time to do that, but some of them have been a bit, you know, particularly there when the indiscretion was changed, you know, with the three up. If there's a black card, you know, that you can't have the, you know, you can have the 11 be the 10, if you like. That seems to have been not followed through in a couple of games by refs and that. And there's anecdotal evidence. Just so I'd like to see what's been made, how it's bedding in the club. Mm. So that's why I asked Gary McDade and Barry Meehan to come on and talk about that, just to see how things is opening up in the club season in these early stages. And of course, big under 20 final this Wednesday night as well, up in Owen Beg. Our under 20s are playing Tyrone. Gary Boyd's team, they hammered Cavan 419-27 there last week in the semi. So that's setting up an intriguing game in Owen Beg. And that team's certainly flying and good for the future. Seems a lot of talented young Donegal footballers coming through.
Brilliant stuff. Listen, we only scratched the surface. Brendan Devaney, thank you very much indeed. The DL debate on tonight just after 7 o'clock. Well, a lot of sport happened at the weekend, including something that you don't see very often, and that's a true sort of crossover boxing match where not only just boxing fans are tuned in because they've been waiting for it and anticipating it, but you get people who don't always watch boxing but get caught up in a story or get caught up in the characters and find themselves tuning in. And that's what happened on Saturday night, because 35 years on from Chris Eubank Sr. and Nigel Benn battling it out in Birmingham, and then a draw, I think it was in Old Trafford, thereafter. The war between the families continued. Chris Eubank Jr. took on Conor Benn, and I'm delighted to welcome onto the show pro boxer, promoter, pundit, mountain climber. Where does the list, doesn't it? Presenter. Jason, good morning to you, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Not a problem, Greg. Pleasure to be on, lad. Pleasure.
I remember watching these two. They go at it. I remember, I'd say, watched it with Nigel Benn's brother in a pub I was working with in England on a big screen, and it was just one of the most amazing experiences in my life. And I thought, right, you know, Benn's too light. Conor Benn's too light. Chris Eubank Senior's too old and has lost too much weight. This can never match expectations. But it was absolutely phenomenal, straight into my top three boxing matches I've ever seen. What was your take on it all?
Yeah, I think it was very similar to yourself, Greg. You know, you hit the nail on the head. There's not too many crossover fights that end up like this, but there's not too many sons of legends that get into boxing and actually go on and produce what they produce. Like, they're both good fighters, talented fighters, but I believe that rivalry, that anticipation, that family hatred really brought the two fighters to another level. And for fight fans, it was an absolute treat. And it definitely is up there as well for me for one of those top fights that I've ever watched. Like, it was just relentless from the very start to the very end. I couldn't believe that they kept it going from the first bell. Like, Conor Benn came out in that first round and really tried to take the head off Chris Eubank. And I think that was maybe what we anticipated in a way, because of the build-up and the hype where Eubank is relaxed and calm and, you know, takes everything in a stride, whereas Ben is very emotional, very out there, lets you know how he feels, and it just ended up an unbelievable fight.
And like you've done training and you know about losing weight and all of that. How difficult is it to keep going like they went going deep into the fight? Do you know, to have those energy levels, the level of training, and I think even maybe Will kept them going because they both ended up in hospital, and Junior still officially medically dehydrated this morning. What level of fitness would be required to be so active, so deep into a 12-round fight?
To be honest, like, you can be as fit as you want, but boxing is one of those sports that can take you to a dark place and a deep place that you really see if... there's other words for it, but you really see if you have a heart in you. Do you know what I mean? And these lads went to those dark places in that fight. They released something, unlocked something in them that I'm not even sure that they thought that they had inside them. And that is the build-up of, like, these lads were kids whenever their dads were fighting. Like, they have grown up with this instilled in them, like, even unknown to themselves, like when they were walking around as kids and growing up, that hatred, that rivalry was always there, was always building up to this moment. And it doesn't matter how fit you are, like, you always have an extra gear in you if you can go to that place. And the two lads really went to that place, and the weight definitely plays a part. Like, I have so much respect for Conor Benn. I really liked him before this fight anyway. But to move up two weight divisions, like, this guy has moved up two weight divisions. And to be honest, in this fight, he was the one that hurt Eubank more than Eubank hurt him, from what I've seen. You know, he hit Eubank in a couple of the rounds and really wobbled him, dazed him for a bit. But Eubank just kept coming back and used his size, used his strength towards the end of the fight, lay on Conor Benn on the ropes, you know, put the pressure on him, even though he might be hitting him big hard shots, he was lying over the top of him, using that extra couple of kilos that he had on him. And I think that's what won him the fight, to be honest.
It was almost like, you know, a retired Stone Cold Steve Austin returning to WrestleMania. When that door opened Chris Eubank Jr. was there. I mean, the pop in the stadium, but I mean, honestly, the pop in my front room that was something else, wasn't it? It was almost the highlight of the night in a way. You would think, no, the fight can't match that. But the door swinging open and him stepping out, like, it was something else.
And it really is. He's a phenomenal character in general. It's like something out of a movie, to be honest. You know, it really is. It was very movie-like, the whole build-up to the fight. The actual fight itself was like a Rocky movie. You know, the way that they went at it, the way that the tables kept turning and won for Ben and then kept turning for Eubank. You know, but the two fathers really made it, as he says, like, and to see Chris Eubank Sr. stepping out, the presence that he has is something else. And, you know, once you see him, I think everybody puts a smile on their face, whether it's a good smile or a bad smile.
He's mad as a box of frogs, you know. But, I mean, it just made the whole night. I have no appetite, but I know this is going to sound strange. I have no appetite to see that again. I don't know what your views are. I think they got away with it once. I think Ben coming up a couple of weight divisions, although Eubank has fought at 160 in the last three or four fights of his, so he should have been fit to make it, right? But I think he struggles that weight anyway. I would just leave it there. I don't think I want to see it again. I don't know. What do you think? What do you want?
What would I want is, I would love to see it again. I would love to see them going at it again. And I think maybe Eubank will win a little bit more convincingly this time now because he has that edge. But Conor Benn is always dangerous. Like, I was so impressed with his explosiveness throughout the whole fight, his sharpness, his movement. It looked very novice-y, it looked very raw, but it caused Chris Eubank so much trouble because he couldn't pin him down. He was throwing the jab 1 minute, he was way round to the left-hand side. Like, he wasn't just bobbing and weaving, slipping side to side. He was actually completely around to Eubank's left shoulder, then he'd be around to his right shoulder, and really dazzled.
Barry, I actually laughed at, like, I was watching it on the zone, and Barry Jones said in the first three or four rounds, and it really actually made me belly laugh. He said something like he's doing it all in no man's land, and it was kind of true. He was bobbing and weaving and throwing punches, not even in the zone. But and you thought, right, he's used up all his energy, he's banjaxed, and yet it was on. So, two questions then, right? If you were his promoter, what would you do? We have to keep in mind, right, he's got fantastic WBC options at 147, Ben has. You know, he's a young fighter. As you say, the odds are all probably stacked against him in a rematch. If you're Eddie Hearn, do you go for probably... Well, I mean, he's going to make money any which way. And he sat down in front of you and he says, look, Jason, what do you think I should do? Do you go for the rematch, try and settle the score? Or do you go and operate at your own weight where you know you've got great endurance and you know you've got great power and you know you've got a real good chance of winning the gold?
Yeah, so, like, as I said, there's a few options here. Like, personally, I would love to see the fight again because it was an unbelievable... I think it could be like an Eric Morales, Marco Antonio Barrera kind of trilogy of fights. But if I'm promoting this fight, if I'm promoting Conor Benn right now, I would definitely take him back down to his natural weight, get him a world title, fingers crossed, nothing's ever guaranteed, but after putting in a performance like that against a guy at middleweight, I would have a lot of confidence that he's going to down. Barros, I think, is the guy that's the WBC champion right now, and I think that Conor Benn can win that world title and kick that off his career. You know, he's done it, as you says, he's done it now. They've had the fight. It was an unbelievable fight. But I would take him back down to 147-pound welterweight division, go for the world title, because that Eubank rematch will always be there. It'll always be something that people want, whether it's two fights down the line, three fights down the line, because of how entertaining it was inside and outside the ring. So to answer your question, definitely, if I'm promoting Conor Benn right now, I'm taking him down to 147-pound to win a world title, and it's always there for him again, that option of the rematch.
And I'm kind of arguing with myself, though. The problem is that he's minted, and I'm not sure it's the gold that would motivate him, if you know what I mean. I think it probably might be to settle that score, because so much was put into it. It's fascinating. I must get a word with you. Go ahead. Sorry, Jason.
Yeah, well, to be honest, Greg, like, every man gets into the sport to become a world champion.
Right.
And if he has all the riches and the money in the world, you can't buy a world title.
Mm.
Like, that's something that I think would really get him up in the morning and really drive him to tick that off his career list, is to become a world champion, because it's a very high possibility that he can go and win that world title. And as he says, Eubank is always there, and Eubank's a money man, without a doubt. Like, he'll always go that fight again for the money. So it's an interesting one, what they'll do.
The performance of the night, arguably, in terms of actual skill and success, was Aaron McKenna. Not a lot of people would know him. He went in against Liam Smith, wasn't it? And, you know, Liam Smith himself coming up off the back of a defeat, but would have fancied his chances against a, you know, a lanky, potentially inexperienced Irish boxer. But that was one of the best boxing performances I've seen in quite some time, in terms of the way he spun around Smith, how accurate he was with his punches. The tip-tapping punches, he was thrown back at the hand punches in bunches. It was really quite a remarkable performance. What did you make of Aaron McKenna, and where do you see his place in the game?
I think for Aaron, that was the perfect fight at the perfect time on the perfect stage. If you could write a fight in his career, and place it there, that would be the one. You know, Liam Smith, I think we counted it up, I think he's professional now 17 years. You know, it was nearly 9-10 years ago when he fought Canelo. He's have a lot of miles on the clock, and this is taking nothing away from Aaron's performance. He went in there and did exactly what he was meant to do against the more experienced former world champion. Like, he went in there and beat a former world champion. So this is going to give him all the confidence in the world. Well, he was world champion. I beat him, and I didn't only beat him, I comfortably beat him nearly every single round. I can go on now and become a world champion. And that's what professional boxing is about. It's about getting the right fights at the right times. And Aaron McKenna took that opportunity with both hands, and he is right up there now. One thing is now that he beat Liam Smith, yes, a brilliant name, former world champion, but Liam Smith is well past his best. And Aaron McKenna can't really go any lower now than Liam Smith again. You know, he's in that bracket now where he has to fight top-rated fighters. And if he comes in against somebody at his own prime now, or in their prime as well, the similar to Aaron, which is going to happen now when he's at that level, that's when we're going to see really how far Aaron can go. He has shown everything that it takes to go to the top against a Liam Smith. Now it's time for him to get in there with somebody around his own age, around the same stage in their career, that are both hungry, young, and fighting for that world title strap. Then we see how far Aaron McKenna can go. But for now, he has shown absolutely everything. Amazing performance on the biggest of stages, and took it all in his stride. An absolute fantastic performance by him. And, you know, he set himself up lovely now for next couple of fights in his career to really go on and get what he wants.
And I think given his style, unless he can adapt, I think his professional window might be narrower than others, if you know what I mean, given the fact he moves so much and stuff. So he'll need to crack on, but good matchmaking. Very finally, right, you're not retired yet, Jason. What, have you got the call from
officially?
Are you fighting again?
Well, look, there's a lot of things going on right now with the management and promoting and everything like that. There's no eagerness to get back into the ring right now. If the right opportunity came along, if a Jake Paul phone call came along, I would jump at the chance.
Do you have world title ambitions anymore, Jason? Like, you know, you've been there, you headlined your own show on DAZN. You talked earlier on about the desire that Ben and Eubank had, and you're not going to waste your time or time with your family. Like, do you have, you know, title aspirations anymore, or would it be a sort of a crossover misfits kind of a thing that might make you interested? Like, are you motivated to do what needs to be done at the very highest level to secure a strap?
It's something that has been going over my head, Greg. You know, it's I'm at that stage where I still have a lot left in the tank if I want to give it another rattle, and at the same time, you know, I'm at an age as well where it is, you're still young and you can still enjoy the rest of your life and everything as well. But it's just, to be honest, it's one that I'm still sitting with, Greg, at the minute. And
But when that happened, did you think, you know, really what you'd want, wouldn't you? You'd want to be sort of watch that match on Saturday and go, you know what? I could get in the mix here. I'm at the same weight as Chris Eubank Jr. You know, I've got an in with Eddie Hearn. You know, maybe he wants a different type of fight next time out. You know, if you're not sleeping on Saturday because you want a piece of that, then you're probably leaning more towards the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong. I think that once you're a fighter, you're always a fighter. And no matter if I'm 40, 50, 60 years of age, I think you're always going to get a little bit of butterflies in the stomach. You're always going to get a little bit of, I could get in there and give that a go. Like, it's just that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff's instilled in you. And, you know, once you have that attitude of, you know, when you're a boxer, when you're a fighter, Greg, like, yeah, you know, you always fancy yourself. You always think that you can get in there and, you know, give it everything. And that's the mindset that you need to become a champion anyway. But I think anybody that's in this sport, you know, you're never going to get into that ring, and you should never get into that ring unless you think that you're well and capable of doing it. So it doesn't matter what age I'll be, Greg. I think if I watch a fight like that on Saturday night, I'll always get a wee butterfly, or I'll always get a wee something inside me saying, geez, we'll give it a rattle. Like, you know, so look, not beating around the bush either. Like, I'm on the fence right now, and, you know, very shortly I need to make up my mind what's going on, because either way it doesn't get beneficial and either.
No, because really what you'd be talking about if you were going to go without it again, you'd actually be talking about locking yourself away, you know, hooking up with a trainer.
Exactly.
And yeah. One very, very, very final question, and maybe I'm wrong in how I've judged your career. Do you ever regret not, because you went to the States and with De La Hoya and all that, do you ever regret not doing the full British boxing scene, European titles, you know, domestic fights, you know, big domestic fights? Is that any regret that you have, or do you think, because I feel we were kind of robbed a little bit of the big home nights, you know, proper sort of built domestic fights for a, you know, probably an Irish title, but if the truth be told, you know, like a European or an international or a British title, and then moving on from there?
Yeah, well, like, I would never have fought for a British title anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of European, Worlds, Intercontinental titles, you know, that would definitely have been something. Of course, you would love to have taken back home to Ireland and defended or won that title over here and, you know, had those big nights. And it's something that I look back on and be like, would have been different if I had done it more at home? Would have been different if I done it more over in LA and in the States? It's a very hard question. You know, like, I do definitely feel as if, you know, I'm on the same page as you, that I think the people missed out that followed me all through my career, especially throughout my amateur career and, you know, into the professional game. Because, look, it's not cheap. It's not easy to get away over to the States for big fights and everything like that. So, you know, maybe I do wish that I had a couple more fights back at home at that high level. Like, you know, at fighting for the world title, fighting the likes of Shane Mosley Jr. Like, imagine taking those fights back to Ireland. Like, those would have been incredible. But it was just the way that it panned out. I was signed with Golden Boy De La Hoya, and, you know, then I was with Eddie, and any of the opportunities, you know, I kind of had made my name a little bit over in the States then at that stage, and DAZN always wanted to have me on over in the States, the likes of Madison Square Garden, the likes of Boston, you know, they kind of wanted me more there to sell those shows.
And you also jumped stages that you couldn't go back on. You talked a little earlier about Aaron McKenna. Do you know what I mean? You kind of catapulted above that. It would have been a come down for you to then start, you know, in the traditional domestic scene, if you know what I mean. It's just the pathway, and no regrets, but I mean, we had great nights, don't get me wrong. It's just the one element of it, you know, like the sort of the Steve Collins route and getting to a big, you know, that sort of way.
Of course, like those would have been nice as well, you know what I mean? But like, it's, if I had done those, would I have got to fight Madison Square Garden? Would I have got to fight
Vegas? You've done all right.
You know, like, that's what I mean. Like, there's always two sides of it.
Of
you
course,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, it's kind of just of course, the one that you didn't have or you didn't want, of course, it would have been great to do them all. But the ones that you didn't get, you'd be like, oh, I wonder would that have been good.
Yeah, no.
You know, and then if I hadn't done that, like, the amount of UK and Irish fighters that their whole aim and their whole goal,
do what you did.
Like Josh Warrington, is all he wants is a fight in the States, a big fight in the States.
Mm.
You know what I mean? But he's done everything in Leeds and had a massive following in Leeds and sold out arenas. You know, so look, it's sure.
You don't know. Exactly. No, it's just because I've often thought myself, and there's no point me thinking when I have an opportunity to put it to you. Listen, great stuff, Jason. Thanks so much for the chat. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, Greg. Take care. Thanks for having me on. Bye-bye. Okay,
we're joined on the programme now by Alice Lynch, owner of Maggie's Tavern, and this is our Monday Focus because 30 years. Astonishing, three decades. Thanks so much for calling in, Alice. Hard to believe, your first visit into the station.
Absolutely.
To sit and have an interview.
Absolutely, the first visit, and delighted to be here, and thank you for your invitation, Greg.
You're delighted to be from St. Johnstone as well, and the people of St. Johnstone, a very proud St. Johnstone woman.
Yeah, East Donegal, St. Johnstone, born and bred, all the rest. So delighted to be there. Just settled into the hub of the pub. Was living in Sligo for a number of years, moved on, but then came back to the pub. So 30 years this year, and delighted to be part of it. And my community has been so supportive of me.
But you too, of the community, it's a hub. It's new. Hope we talked. We were talking last, and I'm not sort of comparing a church with a pub. Don't get me wrong, but we were talking yesterday about the importance of a building, and sometimes we overlook how important a local establishment can be, and how many memories are formed and associated with there.
Well, the pub Maggie's has been the hub for a lot of christenings, funerals, parties. Different events, never mind playing cards, never mind playing darts or in that line. So we've also been very supportive in regards to charity events. We've supported the Little Angels, and actually we've had 125,000 over 10 years of cycling. We have had the TR Barbecue Committee, which was the pig in the spit, and again Tony Rogers and the guys there had over 130,000. So we have given back. So I feel very gratitude. It's so much support, and I feel gratitude to all those people that have supported me. And then we have equally supported them back, whether it be the Down Syndrome, the Donegal Community Hub in Balbuffet for special people. So we have given back as well. But I'm delighted that they have been using Maggie's as their hub, and then we have helped support the charities.
It's a mutually beneficial relationship, and not every business owner recognises that. So it's great that you do. I'm trying to think of recessions and crises over 30 years. There have been many ups, and we've talked of just the ups there, and the downs as well. Business is tough, isn't it, at times?
Absolutely. 30 years ago, I entered the pub and customers came in, but their needs have changed. So in 2007 or so, I attended a Leo event in Letterkenny in the Radisson. And I remember a talk going, and it was about you'll have to get involved in food. And I remember not liking hearing what I was hearing at the time from the Leo. But I remember thinking, I have to do something about this. So through that then, I went then and became a chef. I went to Killybegs Catering College, the ATU campus over in Killybegs. And I did the 2 years over there. And therefore then, we were able to do the food in the pub. I didn't like it at the time, but it was the best thing to do for to just go and I took on the challenge and I did it. It wasn't easy with a small family and all the rest. But if you want to do something, you have to go and do it. And I went ahead and did it. And through that, then I became the party. So my customers' needs changed. So then I catered for their parties, like small, simple food, burgers, sausages, just simple stuff. But we have the best beef in the country. Cook it for 10 hours and you have to sample our beef.
Well, no, that sounds like an invite.
But I changed our offering out there. I attended different courses. I went to the ETB. I learned about a social media. I went to the local enterprise board. So I went out to different groups.
Well, he's constantly adapting and learning. Every day is a learning day, but you're the proof for that. And I think you're so right, because you do see it as a customer, whereby with the best will in the world, you can tell that a business hasn't looked at its clientele. So they have an idea as to the type of restaurant or food service they want to provide, but then they haven't sort of looked at their clientele and what they want. And that's probably a potential problem. You always adapted your offering to what you knew your customers wanted.
Well, I didn't always get it right either.
No.
But I definitely tried hard about it. And I tried to keep the price point right as well with our changing costs. And cost of doing business, it has gone so high. It's just unbelievable. But you still have to think about who I am serving and who is the people putting the bread and butter on my table. So I have tried to run the business with the clientele that I have. We don't have any tourists, so it's ordinary local people like myself and ordinary people that come and support us. So we have to keep a balance there, and that hasn't been easy, but I'm getting on with it and people appreciate it.
All the best to Alice and all the team at Maggie's Tavern, who do so much to raise funds for the Donegal Hospice. That's one of the charities you mentioned, and we'll come back to some of that. But also, too, you know, you talked about how busy you were, you know, running a business, obviously spending a lot of time in upskilling, having young family, and all the responsibilities that come with life. But also, too, you've a big passion in ladies' sport. Talk to me why that is and how you've tried to support ladies' sport over the years.
This is my legacy. When I started the pub, there was no women involved in any sport, not even darts. And even my Aunt Maggie that had the pub before me, there was no ladies playing darts. I remember as a child throwing darts. But my legacy is supporting the local football women's teams, supporting the cricket club, which I have. They have a new team as well in St. John's, the cricket club. I've sponsored a cup there. So on Saturday, we're going to have 7-a-side ladies, and it's going to be organised by Louise Sharkey, who is busy in our football, and 7-a-side, and I'm giving them a small financial contribution. But I want to say to them, if you can do it, you can do it. Just go and do it. It's just like Rory McIlroy saying, keep coming back, keep working hard at it, and you can do it. Like, anything is possible.
Never give up on your dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely that is my legacy. The women in sport, the women can do it if they want. I've seen so much change, and I'm an advocate for the women in sport. And just get on and do it. And, you know, when you're doing some sort of exercise, you feel far better. I myself just have to walk, and I'm very blessed that I have a walking partner, Larissa Feeney. So, and I go to the Lufford AC, but I can't run at all. So okay. No running for me.
Friday the 2nd of May, there's a weekend of events celebrating 30 years of 30 years in Maggie's. There's an opening celebration. It's a free event. Complimentary food served. Special guest, Jessica McKean.
Yes, Jessica.
That's at 7.
Yeah. Jessica McKean, she represented Ireland in the Junior Eurovision. We have Clement Clark, and then the big band then at night, then Martin Cuff. But this is for my locals, those people, you know who yous are. I'm opening my doors, come on in, see what you can get, whatever it is. But I'm very grateful for your support in the past, and I look forward to the future. So it's a nice free evening in whatever way you can, with food or whatever. So I'm very welcoming anyone that can make time.
It's an open invo, of course, and as you say, it's of the community, for the community. On Saturday, there's an MS charity walk at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. There's a kids fun day, the football challenge you mentioned, live music in the bar from 8, and then in the evening, Gary Gamble, Olivia Douglas, Brian Kerrigan, and a surprise guest.
Yes, well, we're not going to tell you who the surprise guest is.
I always get it out of people when they try to not tell me.
It could be a little gentleman and a very, very number one representative of Donegal. And who's the number one in Donegal?
But I also see who's also there, and I'm wondering.
Yes, you know yourself it's going to be
all right.
We're so proud.
Okay.
We're so proud.
Sunday the 4th of May, live music in the bar, Johnny Mac can spin the wheel, and then the closing celebration, Country Harmony, and the step-by-step dancers performing as well. So you're going to have a good fun weekend.
Yes, and I hope to, like I said, about family fun as well. So we have bringing the teddy bear there for the kids, Kevin's train as well, also there. So it's to encapsulate every age group. It's a community, it's a hub. Everybody's welcome, you know. So that's what we're trying to encapsulate.
And
something for everybody.
I get the impression from you, Alice, you're full of energy, you're full of drive. Are you always looking at what next?
Well, at this moment, this milestone has given me a little bit of thought. what's it all about. Like, it can't last forever, but at the same time, at this moment, I'm enthusiastic. I want to keep doing it for another while, but I am emphasising about the women's sport, and I'm also so grateful for all customers that have come through my door, Maggie's door, for the last 30 years, and I really wish them very well and health and happiness. And I know that we have helped through the charities. We have given back, and I hope to continue to give back for another while. So I'm not finished yet.
No, exactly. It sounded like I'm trying to get everyone to retire today. That wasn't my motivation for asking. Congratulations to Alice and her team from all on the MS Donegal Committee. She's been a great support to us, and we would like to let her know how much we appreciate all the support she's given to us over and here to another 30 years. Just to wish Alice the best of luck in her celebrations this weekend. That's another one from MS Donegal. Alice and her family have helped support MS Donegal branch over the years, as the first pig in a spit was donated to the branch, and we had coffee mornings, even one last Saturday where we collected €615. So good wishes to the future. That's amazing. One coffee morning, €650 for that great organisation. Just goes to show.
Well, and then just during the weekend that we're having, so when people come in on the night, okay, we're inviting them to buy lines, €2 or three for a fiver, and that is going to be shared between Patrice McCrossan, you know, the McCrossan family, and poor wee Zach, then the Balbuffet Community Hub for special people, for special adults in Balbuffet, and then the third one is Deal Harps Football, because they're supporting us as well. Mm. So there's a bit of giving back in that as well. So I'm delighted.
And I love the appreciation you have for locals, because what you do see in certain areas that, you know, do get tourism industry, that locals can get forgotten about during the busy times. And yet come winter time, it's like, well, where are all the locals? You know, whereas you, it's 365 days a year. I mean, obviously you're going to have people call in on the way past and come in from different towns, don't get me wrong, but you realise your success is down to your relationship with your locals.
Well, my locals are my bread and butter. We don't have a tourist area, so my locals are my bread and butter, and I deeply appreciate them.
Best of luck to Alice for the 30th anniversary celebrations from everyone at Deal Harps FC. Thanks for all your support throughout the years. We're so proud of you, Alice. Well done. That comes in from Debbie. And the Swilly Gardening Club in Buncrana. You say there's no tourists.
They came a busload.
Hello, yeah. Say there's no tourists.
Oh, yeah, well, I meant to. I'm standing corrected there, yeah.
I'm with Buncrana tourists. But anyway, they had a light lunch in Maggie's Tavern last June. We were made so welcome on the day by Alice and her staff, and the food was lovely. That comes in from Margaret. I'm only messing, of course. Buncrana's aren't tourists. Listen, Alice, have a great weekend. Do you allow yourself to enjoy it? I haven't seen you in action. Are you up to high dough, making sure everything's right, or do you chill?
On the Friday night is my night. I'm going to get dressed up, and McElhenney's actually, I got the suit in McElhenney's, so it's a cerise pink, and this is not me, but you know what? You have to get out there, I'm always telling my customers, you have to celebrate your achievements, because the negatives come at us anyway every day. Of course.
Well, people will spot you anyway in your beautiful pink suit. Congratulations, Alice. Lovely having you.
Greg, thank you for your hospitality, and to everybody else. And I want to thank my husband and family for all their support as well, and everybody else. Thank you very much for having me.
Take care. That's Alice Lynch. We're back tomorrow morning at 9. Stay safe and stay tuned.